The Rodcast.
If you want more information, go to rodders.com and click on Rodders FM.
Right, now, without further ado, without any more monkeying, yes, monkeying around, this is a proper good show. We've got, it's nearly Valentine's Day, I've dropped my bit of paper. But now, take some toast, spread it on some jam, although that's complete nonsense. This is Rodders FM, let's get on with the show!
Warning, warning, this show is complete bollocks and is not fit for human consumption. If you or anyone you know are suffering severe mental episodes due to the content of this show, call the Rodders FM Psychiatric Helpline on 0844-884-831. You have been warned.
Your week's been naff. You've taken crap from everyone you know. But Friday come like morning sun. It's Rodders. Brand new show.
It's got Z-list guests, crazy competitions, Mystic Mug, and Beelzebub.
This song is diabolical.
Thank God it's Friday. It's the day after Thursday. Thank God it's Friday. It's the day after Thursday. Thank God it's Friday. It's the day after Thursday.
Hello, this is Jackie Stewart, and you're listening to Rodders FM.
Yes, that's right. You are now listening to the one, the only. The one they like to call Rodders FM. We are Rodcasting. Yes, that's a real word. Live across the internet on Rodders.com. Now, let me give you the rundown of what is on the show in Hoosen. Tonight in Hoosen. But firstly, there's a few ways you can contact me tonight. You can email me, radio@rodders.com. Or you Skype me, my Skype name is RoddersFM, all lowercase. And a big shout out to Rodders2 in the chat room. That's me, hey. Now, sorry, no Mystic Mug tonight, I'm afraid. But what we do have on the show tonight is our special guest, Ian Woods. He is a Sky News correspondent. He's been to Iraq. He has been to Afghanistan. And the music's back. And that means I'm in a very, very good mood. He has been to Iraq. He has been to Afghanistan. And as of late, he has been covering the Madeleine McCann story. You know, and it's just getting weirder and weirder. The stuff that the tabloids keep drawing up. We have a long talk with him coming up on the show. And a big shout out to Not Gay in the chat room. That's his username. Unless it's his real name. Imagine if your parents named you Not Gay. They'd probably be quite fervent Christians and wouldn't want your son to turn out gay. But also, tonight on the show, as it's Valentine's Day, I want you to send in your worst chat-up lines. Now, I've got some pretty bad chat-up lines. Hey, baby. If you were meat, I'd stick my kebab in you. Oh, that's terrible. I made that up on the spot. Girl, you look like a pair of curtains. You better pull yourself together. That made absolutely no sense. But I'm not going to waste lots of time with that now. But I'm going to give you time to think. Oh, yeah. So we've got one in from the chat room already. Leanna is hot on the button. Yes, you can call in at any time. I just won't answer the phone because I'm talking. Best to call during a song. And Leanna in the chat room said, has got a great chat-up line. Is that a ladder in your tights or a stairway to heaven? I mean, that's hilarious. I've also got a couple of announcements to say. We have a Rodders FM Facebook group. Go to Facebook, search Rodders FM, and I'll put a link up there very shortly on the site. No wonder nobody's joining it, because there's no link from the site. And also my MySpace, it's rodders.com/RoddersProductions. And an absolutely brilliant thing you can now do, you can subscribe to me and get a text or an email notification every time I go live. Just go to stickcam.com, sign up for an account, there's loads of cool stuff. You get your own live chat room.
If you want a little CLP of your own, visit www.cleverlittlepod.com.
Rodders FM.
This is Rodders FM, and that was an advert for Clever Little Pod, an amazing podcast. Just before we go on to the interview, it's time for this.
Now's the part of the show where Rodders will go on a rant about what really makes him sick.
You make me fucking sick to my stomach.
Do you know what really makes me sick? No, really, I want to know. Don't answer it. That's a rhetorical question. Do you know what makes me sick? Well, I'm about to tell you. You don't want to know? I really can't. I really couldn't care less. General rules imposed in institutions such as, I don't know, hospitals and schools. For instance, I work at Hospital Radio Reading. In order to control infection in the wards, I have to put alcohol hand rub on my hands when I go around to visit the patients. Fair enough. But they tell you to roll your sleeves up and not wear a watch. What is going on? But I've come up with an alternative. Why don't we all just have our own personal Mr. Wolf, for God's sake? Trouble is, when it came to dinner time, you'd have to run an absolute flipping mile. But the main thing I'm going to moan about is petty rules at school. Now, I'm not having a go at my school, because actually, believe it or not, I like it. As pessimistic and moany as I am, I enjoy it. This is imposed by the catering firm, which caters for the school. And this is directed directly at a man I refer to as Cheese Officer Dibbles. That's right. Lately, his latest campaign to make everyone eat healthily. Yum, 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 yum. If you're not in the chat room, please get in the chat room. We don't bite. What was I saying? Cheese Officer Dibbles. And his job, he's a sort of a lanky, skinny guy. And he just thought it would be good to ration the cheese. For goodness sake, as an example, I've got some fish on my plate for fish and chips. And I've got a nice, lovely bowl of soup. And I say, oh, where's the cheese? Oh, I'd like to put some cheese in my soup. And he just goes, what you got on your plate? Fish. What does it look like? And he's like, you've got too much protein on your plate. You've exceeded your maximum quota of protein. I just go, excuse me. Are you joking? I know he wasn't joking. It was absolutely ridiculous. So I then made a huge show of taking someone else's cheese and going, oh no, I'm exceeding my cheese quota. It's absolutely ridiculous. It makes me sick. And I've had another big argument with Cheese Officer Dibbles over the fact that he sells unripe fruit at an extortionate price in the break hall. It's ridiculous. I go up to him and say, I go up to the counter, I go, can I buy some fruit, please? I feel like having some of my five a day. Being healthy, as you're always banging on to me about being healthy. And the woman goes, oh yeah, 50p. I was like, excuse me? I was like, I don't have my wallet, which was the truth. I said, oh, put it on my school bill. Because I said that as a joke. Then they get the superior, Cheese Officer Dibbles. He comes marching in with his royal skinniness and his silly little hat. And he started getting all aggressive. He goes, like a little boxer going, I don't give away freebies. And I was like, excuse me, freebies? There is no such thing as freebies in a school where you pay quite a lot of fees. And he's like, and I said, look, I'm a boarder. I bet my boarding fees cover the price of a banana. And it makes me sick. Luckily, there is light in the sky, people. They've stopped rationing the cheese. The cheese police have been beaten back by constant moaning Year 7s. It would have turned into an international incident. Oh, I really enjoyed that. And basically, this is Rodders FM, live across the internet on rodders.com. Very shortly, we are going to have an interview with Ian Woods. And I would just like to say a huge, huge, huge thank you to Jack Bailey and his father, Steve Bailey. They organised this interview for me, and so basically I'm very, very grateful to both of you. A huge shout out.
I'm an old man in an old people's home, listening to Rodders FM. I would change the station, but my hip's dislocated. Would somebody get me the nurse?
No, damn it, stop applauding. I really do need a nurse.
And now, I'm really excited to introduce tonight's special guest. His name is Ian Woods. He's a correspondent for Sky, not Ground, Sky News. He's been to Iraq. He's been to Afghanistan. He's met Bill Clinton. It's Ian Woods, everyone. Your career started at Mercia Sound in Coventry, where you presented a heavy metal program. How did your career then... How did you then become an international correspondent for Sky?
When I was at Mercia, I was just starting out in my career, and I wanted to be a bit of a jack-of-all-trades. I wanted to do a little bit of everything. And when I was in radio, I did a little bit of news, I did a little bit of sports, I commentated on football matches, and the people at the radio station knew that heavy metal was my taste in music, so they had a program once a week that they needed to fill a slot for, so they said to me, you might as well do that as well. So it was a good sort of preparation, but...
You've interviewed a wide range of people in radio and in your career as a Sky News correspondent. Who's your favourite person you've interviewed?
Oh, that's a really good question. It's always a difficult one, because people who are often your heroes that you will really look forward to meeting, you're actually quite disappointed when you meet them, either because they're not very nice, or they're a bit rude, or they're a bit rushed for time, or whatever. And I remember I didn't really like Paul McCartney as much as I thought I was going to like him. But I tell you, the person who always really, really stands out in my mind, and that's the former US President Bill Clinton, because everybody used to say, this man just has charisma in by the bucket load, and he just knows how to work a room. And it's absolutely true. When you meet him, he has this great ability of making you feel as if you were the most important person he is going to be meeting that day, even though you're probably sort of number 342nd on his list. But he has that ability to make good eye contact and very touchy-feely, puts his hand on your shoulder. And more than that, it was just a really intelligent, well-informed guy.
It seems like you've met a lot of famous people. Is it ever intimidating when you first started out interviewing these famous people? Because recently I had the honour of interviewing Sir Jackie Stewart as he came to our school in Sibford. I managed to get in touch with him. And he's a really, really nice guy, but still I felt pretty overwhelmed that I was talking to somebody like him.
I know, you do get used to it after a while, but there's always still a lot of nervousness if you're meeting somebody and you don't know quite how it's going to go. I mean, I did not sleep very well the night before I interviewed Bill Clinton.
But have you ever had an interview that's, no matter how thoroughly prepared, just hasn't gone well? Because have you ever had some really difficult people that you've had to interview?
It's funny, you tend to sort of banish from your mind the really awful ones.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that Paul McCartney wasn't as much fun as I would have anticipated. I think that was all because of a question which I asked in good faith, but he misinterpreted. And it just so happened that he was going to be on tour at the same time as George Harrison was going to be playing with the Traveling Wilburys, and Ringo Starr was also playing with his band at the time. So the three ex-Beatles were all on tour around about the same time. So I sort of jokingly asked, couldn't you try to arrange it so all three of you are playing in the same city at the same time and, just perhaps, turn up together for an impromptu session together. And he interpreted it as, when are the Beatles ever going to get together, which is a question he's been, tormented with since 1970, and said, oh, you journalists, you always, want to think that the Beatles are going to, get back together again. It isn't going to happen. And I didn't mean it like that. I didn't mean it as a serious question.
Throwaway comment. And
absolutely. I'll tell you another person who I really find difficulty with, and it comes down to into the category of heroes of yours that you've always looked up to, and that is one of my favourite bands, were always Queen, and I really like their drummer Roger Taylor, and I was interviewing him about not something to do with the music business, but because he donated money to a campaign to do with football supporters, and I was interviewing him about that. And all we needed to do as part of our interview, and the interview went fine, and he was reasonably friendly, but we needed, for television purposes, to get some pictures of him doing something, i.e. drumming, which is what he's famous for. So I remember saying to him, and we were, bearing in mind, we were in his recording studio in his home in Surrey, and there was a drum kit sitting there, and all I wanted was him to play the drums for me for about 30 seconds. And he kept on refusing to do it. And I'd be flattering him and telling him what a great drummer he was and how I loved his music and go on and give us 30 seconds, Roger. And eventually, under much protest, he sat down at the drums and hit three drums and then said, oh, that's enough then. Three drums.
That's ridiculous.
The shortest drum roll in history. So he went a little bit down in my estimation, I have to say.
That's right. Why couldn't he just play the drums? You should have tried bribing him with sweeties. That might have worked.
I should have done. I should have brought some jelly beans with me. But
I understand you've been a war correspondent as well, and you've been to Iraq and Afghanistan. What was it like reporting in Afghanistan? Because from judging by what I've seen on the news about Afghanistan, it looks like an absolutely terrifying place.
It was. I mean, a lot of times when you go to war zones, it's entirely your good fortune if you were there at a quiet time, and bad fortune if you're there at a particularly violent time. Now, the last time I was in Afghanistan was actually some time ago. It was about 3 months after the fall of the Taliban. The Taliban were very much on the run and there was very little violence in Afghanistan at the time as a result. Now, I spent about a month in Kabul and was able to walk the streets very freely. The only time where I was ever worried about security was a time when two guys, you know, who had a Kalashnikov each over their shoulders, which is, you know, fairly common practice in Afghanistan, came up to talk to me and decided they liked my sunglasses and took my sunglasses off me and were planning to keep them for themselves. And you don't really want to get into an argument with people with Kalashnikovs over just a pair of sunglasses. So I didn't want to protest too much, but I did ask for them back. And they kept on refusing and started shouting at me. And I thought, oh, no, what's going to happen next? And then they just burst out laughing and handed back the sunglasses. They were just messing with me.
Ridiculous.
So, you know, that was a bit of a sigh of relief. Iraq was a little bit different. I was in Iraq most recently a couple of years ago, mostly in Basra. But again, as long as we were out on the streets, we were on patrol with the British Army. And although, you know, they, of course, themselves, you know, are often a target, you do feel an awful lot more secure if you are with people who know how to handle situations like that. So we were pretty fortunate. And I did go to Baghdad briefly, and that was quite a journey in itself, because to get into the center of Baghdad, we had to hitch a ride with some U.S. Army helicopters, and the pilots are trained to avoid missile attack, you know, from the ground, by zigzagging, you know, everywhere and making their flight very unpredictable. So that's pretty hair-raising when they are you're in a helicopter with open doors and gunners, you know, poking their machine guns outside, and they're firing off flares from the back to strike heat-seeking missiles and swerving from side to side. It's a bit like an amazing fairground ride, although with a few more risks. But I've been very fortunate. I don't think I've even sort of, you know, come close to being sort of injured or killed, even though I've been in some pretty hair-raising places.
So how do the Army react to the journalists? Do they view the journalists as a nuisance, or how do they deal with them?
It varies very much on individual soldiers, I think. Some soldiers are immediately suspicious of you, and with good reason to be, because quite often their superior officers tell them to be suspicious. You know, be careful about what you say in front of these journalists. You don't know what they're going to report. Others are incredibly friendly. It's a bit of a break from a fairly routine, at times monotonous job for them if they have got a television crew with them. And I wouldn't say that they act up to the cameras, but it's a chance to, you know, often put their point of view. It's a chance to for their families back home to see them at work, quite honestly, because, you know, if we filmed them for a day and that's going to be on television, you know, their families back home who are worried about them get a chance to sort of, you know, see that. So they're very keen to be on the television as a result. And, you know, they watch Sky News every day as well.
When you were in Afghanistan, I read that you gained access to a prison holding members of the Taliban. What exactly did you do there? Did you speak to these Taliban members, or...?
Yeah, I mean they were pretty, I have to say, pathetic specimens at that time, as you and I would be if you'd been kept in the sort of conditions they'd been kept in for a couple of months. There were, I can't remember now, six or seven or eight men in one fairly small cell, about the size of a small bedroom, and they had been there for several months with just a bucket in the corner for, you know, when they wanted to go to the toilet. So it was pretty primitive conditions. You know, a lot of them said at the time, you know, we're not Taliban. You know, we were simply rounded up in bigger groups of people. There were Taliban amongst people who were arrested, but we're not Taliban. You know, we're hoping to be released soon. And I have to say that has turned out to be the case for a lot of people. There are a lot of people in Guantanamo Bay who've been held there over the years. Some have now been released, some not, who I suspect were rounded up in larger groups of people and effectively traded, you know, from one group of militia to another, and then handed on to the US or British forces.
When I understand you've also covered things such as the Michael Jackson trial, when you're reporting on things like this, is it hard to be objective?
No, I think there are certain stories where it is difficult to be objective, and I'll come on to an example of that in a moment. I don't think it's difficult to be objective about Michael Jackson or stories like that. You don't have to get caught up in the in the hysteria that goes with these things. I think that, you know, on the one hand, with when you're, you know, when you are covering the Michael Jackson case, lawyers are telling you one thing, his loyal fans are telling you something completely different, and you know, you try to reflect both sides of the argument. And certainly when it comes to a court case, more than any other story, you are always very diligent at being able to, you know, report the facts and what has been said in court.
Ian, what is the most emotional interview you've ever had to do in your career?
I interviewed a widow from 9/11. Her husband had been killed in the North Tower at the World Trade Center, and I interviewed her several times over a period of a few months, and we became so close that we are now still 6 years later. Friends, we have been on holiday together. I've stayed in her house. When I was leaving the United States, she threw me a party and invited all her friends to say goodbye to me. That's the sort of a relationship that, you know, I think that it's good to have, that you are not just, as I say, in it for a quick headline. You know, you want to be able to you know, show people that you're sympathetic and you care.
Are you still following the Madeleine McCann case?
I am, although I do so with a little bit of caution, because the daily diet of stories which are in the tabloids are almost all rubbish. They are stories which the Madeleine McCann story, very little has happened in 6 months. There have been, you know, occasional moments such as when, you know, people are arrested or the McCanns become a Guido's official suspects, where those are major developments of the story. But there are many, many days where nothing happens, and reporters, particularly from the tabloids, who are still based in Praia da Luz, feel obliged to fill the newspapers with something.
I read recently that the McCanns have tried to arrange a really expensive movie deal about the daughter. Is there any truth behind this, or is this just another story drummed up by the tabloids?
Like a lot of stories, there's always a nugget of truth upon which lots of fiction is built around. The McCanns, over the past 6 months, have been inundated by a lot of offers from journalists, from documentary makers, from filmmakers, from writers wanting to cooperate on books, and a lot of them get rejected out of hand, and some of them get at least debated by the McCanns and their advisors and their friends. And one of the things that they have been talking about is cooperating on some sort of documentary which may publicize, you know, more about Madeleine and the work of trying to find children which have been abducted. But as soon as it was reported that a filmmaker is involved, it was suddenly transformed in some papers to a Hollywood blockbuster movie, which is a completely different thing.
Do you reckon there is any chance of her being found again?
There's always a chance. There is always a chance. Until a body is found, there is always a chance. And the reason I say that, even though my head tells me that Madeleine McCann is probably dead, but there have been so many cases that I've reported on where there have been such an unexpected twist where someone has been found alive. And I very well remember one that I covered in the United States, which was a girl by the name of Elizabeth Smart, who was snatched from her room. I think she was about 11 years old at the time. She was snatched from her room in the middle of the night and wasn't seen for something like 6 or 7 months. And everyone assumed that, you know, she was dead. And she turned up alive. She had been brainwashed by a couple of a man and a woman who were vagrants, and she basically lived as their daughter for 6 or 7 months until she was found. I do believe that someone abducted her. I don't believe that, you know, her parents were involved in her disappearance or death. I do think that she was the victim of a kidnapping. But but the police will tell you that if a little girl is kidnapped, in a lot of cases the kidnapper will dispose of the victim pretty swiftly, and especially if that girl is, you know, someone who has become so famous.
I get the impression from what I read in the media that Portuguese papers and press seem to be very hostile towards the McCann case. Is this true?
I think they're not just hostile towards the McCanns. I just think they're hostile to the British as a whole. I think in the days immediately after Madeleine McCann was abducted, it didn't seem as if the police investigation was terribly thorough and terribly efficient, and the British papers and myself as a television correspondent said so. And I think a lot of the Portuguese police were very insulted by this and started telling all sorts of fantastically inaccurate stories to the journalists that they knew from the Portuguese papers, who then printed them, and then British papers read the Portuguese version and print that, and then there's a denial, and it's just one big vicious circle.
Well, thank you so much for answering my questions and doing this interview with me. It's been really, really good.
All right, thank you, Roderick.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Cheers, bye-bye.
Thank God it's Friday. It's the day after Thursday.
What the hell, we're going to take some calls now. Let's go to the phones, or should I say the Skype line. We're going to go to Jamie, then we're going to go to a song. Oh dear, there's so much going on tonight. It's so bloody exciting. Jamie, are you there? Where are you calling from?
London.
As in London? The home of the British, the home of the tea, ocean finance, and I'm shamelessly copying the Clever Little podcast at cleverlittlepod.com. What is some of your worst chat-up lines?
I've got three for you. Do you want to hear them?
No. Yeah, of course.
Okay, then.
Of course I want to hear them. Go on, spit them out.
Okay,
Let's do this. Let's role play. I'm a girl. My name is Mindy. I'm 20... No, I'm 14 years old. And I'm from Essex. Oh, and I idolise posh Spice. So now you've got to chat me up.
All right then, here goes. All right, so we're in a club dancing, yeah.
All right, we're in a club dancing.
I'm up to you.
All right.
I'm gonna go. Hey, what's your name?
It's Mindy. M-I-N-N-D. Mindy.
Okay. Are you some kind of parking ticket? Because you got fine written all over you.
Nah, my name's Mindy. It's not Binday, and it's not.
Oh, bloody hell.
Okay, are you some kind of devil? Because you sure make me horny.
I'm a devil. My name's Beelzebub.
Look, shut up. We don't want you on the programme. You're not on the schedule tonight.
Oh, look at me. I obey convention of rules and schedules. My name's Robert and I'm a Winkle.
Look, I'm not having language like that. Sorry about that, Jamie. And you wanted to plug your new website, Galaxy.
Hang on, I've got one more.
All right.
This one's kind of rude, but it's the best one. Okay, you ready?
Yes.
So, Mindy, they're nice legs, but what time do they open?
My name's not Mindy. What are you talking about?
You wanted to plug your website. It's called galaxynetworking.com. And what is it?
Galaxy Networking is a social networking website, kind of like MySpace, Bebo, or Facebook. It's just been launched, so go join up, galaxynetworking.com. You can...
But anyway, we're now going to go to a song. It's by a band called Marwood. Check them out, myspace.com/Marwood. They're a great band. They're from New York. myspace.com/Marwood. This is one of their songs called Monday Over Friday. I'm taking your calls. Give me a ring. 0844-8844-831. Or you can Skype me. We're going to be talking to a guy called Josh about a hilarious audition for drama school. And also, I've got a special birthday shout-out to do. Sometimes life is a struggle to stay sober. Like a fire but getting older. But you just can't win. Sometimes life is a stranger in the mirror. You love her so much that you fear her, and you just can't win. But tonight it's like I woke up from a dream, and nothing's quite as broken as it seems. Oh, I'll take Monday over Friday, I'll take you away over my way. Oh, a struggle to remember why she leave and why it lets her, and you just can't win. Sometimes life is everything you'd hope for,
giving to you, but you want more, and you just can't win. But tonight it's like I woke up from a dream, and everything's as broken as it seems. Well, I take Monday over Friday, I take your way over my way. I won't stay out late, and I'll be satisfied. And to tell you that I miss you, all I wanna do is kiss you one more time before you say goodbye.
Thank God it's Friday. It's the day after Thursday.
Now here's Pulp with Common People.
Common People. Common People. Common People, Lord Gary. Common People. Common People.
Thank Rod, it's Friday!
Download the Rodcast, and while you're onto podcasts, go to search for Luke and Paddy's podcast in iTunes, friends of mine, and they've just started, and it's quite funny. And now we're going to speak to somebody called Josh.
Josh is one of the common people.
Sorry.
Oh, hello? Come on.
Hello, is that Josh?
Yeah, is that Rodri?
No, it's the milkman. Josh, you're live across the internet on rodders.com. But Josh, the reason you're on the show tonight is because you've recently been trying to audition for some of the top drama schools, and for legal purposes, I'm not going to name them. And you went to an audition. Just describe, what's an audition like? Because the last thing I auditioned for was actually a film. You may think, wow, film. But obviously I didn't get in, because they were looking for somebody much younger. But, you know,
haven't been discovered quite yet, then.
No, not yet. And people thought I was really arrogant, because I said, you know, I didn't go in there to win it. I just went there for the sake of it. But I was being truthful. I went in to get the experience of doing audition. So if I go in for another audition, I won't be so scared.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So what did you have to do with your audition? Was it petrifying?
Well, the main one I actually went to was just an absolute nut house of a place. It was just mental stuff they were getting us to do. Like, one of the first exercises they got us to do was they said, just would randomly come out with, be fire, go, be water, go. And it's like, what? Okay, so, yeah, this when they were told us to be fire, this one guy was going absolutely mental. His arms and legs were going all over the place. We were all kind of backing away. And then I can see him getting closer and closer to the wall. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
And he's getting closer and closer to the wall, and then eventually his arm's going on, he's right next to the wall, whack, his head goes straight into the wall, and he knocks himself out, he just goes out completely dead on the floor.
Oh, my God, what a complete idiot. I mean, it's just such an abstract thing to do, pretend to be fire. You know, I just whip out a lighter and try and set fire to myself unsuccessfully. That's what I'd do.
It's a bit extreme.
Yeah, but, like...
They're looking for the character, the essence, the Stanislavski.
Yeah, I know, but if you have... And then I suppose you were then told to extinguish the fire by pretending to be water. Then what would you do? Wet yourself?
Seems like the most plausible option.
It's such a ridiculous concept. So, was he okay, this bloke?
Well, I stop and look down at him and just, like, look at everyone else, but none of them are noticed. They're all too busy pretending to be fire and being all theatrical and the like.
Oh,
and
my
so
God.
So eventually, he just kind of gets back up, staggers back up, and then just as nothing has happened, he just carries on pretending to be fire again.
Bloody hell, that's hilarious. Oh, dear. Well, what did you do to pretend to be fire? Did you just wave your arms out and go, I'm fire, I'm fire?
Yeah, I tried to incorporate the character of fire, the kind of emotion that fire... I can't describe what I did, it's too embarrassing.
It's hilarious. I might have a go at it on the webcam, I'm feeling particularly stupid tonight.
Okay, go for it, Robert.
No, you're not right now. I have got some dignity, although after I was singing Common People, I think a lot of it went out the window. but, you know, we'll ask somebody who's an expert on fire, Weelzebub.
Hello, I'm Weelzebub. Weasel Grimly the Second here. Best thing to do is what Ron said and just set himself on fire. Well, I wouldn't advise that, so I don't like agreeing with him.
That's his advice. And I understand there was yet another hilarious audition you went to. I bet, like, you don't even want to go to drama school. You're just going round to laugh at people hurting themselves.
I'm thinking about writing a sitcom about it, you see.
And wasn't there another audition that happened, that something ridiculous happened?
Yeah, well, the second audition I went to, they were given a choice as to whether we could do one of our speeches, which we prepared, you'd be all theatrical and do like, or you could do, an, quote, an improvised contemporary dance exercise. And this guy I was talking to at the time, he was a bit posh and he was from Bristol, and, well, posh and from Bristol don't really know, but you get what I mean.
Not anyway. From Dudley.
Anyway, yeah, I was talking to him, and I go, so what are you going to do? And he goes, well, I'm going to do the improvised dance exercise. Because, you see, they're expecting me to do, you know, the do the speech, but, you know, I'm going to do the dance. And I go, oh, so you're a dancer then? And he goes, no. Anyway.
Did he really do the whole snorting thing?
That's yeah, he was really posh and up in himself, like, and it all came from the nose and really nasal. Yeah,
I really want to sort of impress everyone. I'm going to do the unexpected. I come in to school wearing pink pyjamas. No one would expect that. Apart from it was pink pyjama day. Oh, God, what an idiot. Anyway, sorry, I'm interrupting you.
That's fine, Roger. Yeah, so where was I?
Stoke-on-Trent. No, you were saying, he said,
improvised dance piece, please. And,
yeah, so...
Put some ice with that.
Improvised dance exercise, please. So he's still on the stage, and, this track by Usher comes on, or some hip-hop beat, something Usher. Nick Hossle like. Anyway, he's dancing around, making a complete crap of himself. We're all laughing. And all of a sudden, his front leg slips one way, his back leg slips the other, and his groin smacks into the ground.
Oh, my God! That's horrible. Is Yuli there, and is he going to come on the radio tonight, or isn't he in the mood?
All right, come on, hold on a sec. Just going to go through.
Wicked.
Yuli, you wanted. So, here he is, man himself. Mr.
Okay,
well.
Speak to you in a minute, there. Josh.
Hello?
Hello, Yuli, you all right?
Hi, Rodri, how you doing?
You're good. You're live across the internet on Rodders FM.
I'm what? I'm live across the internet.
On Rodders FM?
Oh, my word. Crikey.
It's all right. Anyone you want to say hello to?
Everybody. Yeah, I'd like to say hello to everybody.
I don't like everybody. He swore at me this morning. But
Keith, yeah, I'd like to say hello, a special mention to Keith, who mended my puncture on my bicycle this morning, which helped me go to school. Thanks, Keith. Thanks
God
for being
bless
that.
You, Keith. No, so I'd just like to take the opportunity to say congratulations to everybody, including you, especially Yuli, in the Crucible. That includes Hugo, who's in the chat room.
Oh, well, thank you. That's very kind of you. Yeah, no, it was a wonderful experience, and I hope everyone enjoyed it. And well done to you too, Rodri.
Cheers.
Who also messaged everyone. Was brilliant.
I was a very sneaky judge named Judge Hazel.
Yeah, but that's very good. Tell you what, I'll pass you back to Josh Hall now.
Yep, cheers, Yuli. Thank you. You've been an absolutely excellent caller. I reckon that is definitely going to make it to the podcast because, you know, there's so much garbage in this show, mainly said by me. Most of it just gets edited out, but I'll make sure this stays in. Thanks, Josh. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Thanks, Rodri, for letting us be on your wonderful radio show.
No problems, Yuli. Bye.
Thank Rod, it's Friday!
Hello?
Hello, is that Hugo?
Yeah?
Oh, no, I was looking for someone else. Hugo, you're on the show. Congratulations and happy birthday to you. A happy birthday to you.
Oh, thank you, Rodri.
And have you got any cheesy chat-up lines?
Yeah, I've got a great one here. It's, just found it just now. It's, would you like to come home and see my boa constrictor?
Yes, I would. Oh, God. What do you mean, Hugo? Hugo, what do you mean
I forgot
you...
it now, but...
Hugo, what do you mean you found it? Was it just sort of lying around on your bedroom floor?
Huh?
Was it just lying around on your bedroom floor?
Yeah, it was. I still hadn't thought of that, actually.
Also, congratulations on the Crucible.
It's
turning into a little bit of a Crucible after party, this. Although,
it is, yeah.
Did you go to the actual after party? I didn't.
By the way, yeah, Leanna did go to the after party, as she just said, and she had some naughty sticks.
Woo! Naughty sticks? Now, we're going to launch a campaign against naughty sticks. I wasn't going to bring this up until later. Speak to you later, Hugo.
Okay,
hello and welcome to Topical Pish, your 90-second celebrity update. I'm Justin Decent. And first this week, it's been reported that the 97-year-old veteran TV actor Herbert Russett, star of the racist 70s sitcom Look Who's Moved In Next Door and the 1980s children's TV drama series Bubble in the Pot, has very sadly lost his spectacles. The horn-rimmed bifocals were last seen on his bedside table, although eyewitnesses believe he may have taken them off in the doctor's where he was reading a pamphlet on gout. British comedy entrepreneur Sir Clive Sinclair has unveiled his latest invention, the pocket rotisserie. The loony device, which folds up small enough to fit inside a peg bag, can roast up to 3 small garden birds at once and is powered by 2 electrodes inserted into an orange. The shiny Bonsk professor, who is often mistaken for Dr. Bunsen, thinks the device will sell particularly well in the Far Eastern markets, where he believes they'll buy any old gadget and eat anything that moves. His next product, launching in 2010, will be a mini helicopter that can be piloted by badgers. Gordon Ramsay has launched his latest reality shouting show. Potty-mouthed Ramsay, 43, supervises death row inmates from Texas as they cook their own last meal. As shown in this clip, the program will see Ramsay use the threat of the electric chair as an effective motivation tool.
Do you want to go?
No way, no way.
Do you want to go?
No way, chef.
Get me a spaghetti and move your ass, chef.
Yes, chef.
You're back in the institute again, aren't you?
No way, chef.
Serving that...
And old habits die hard when a convicted murderer tries to add to his tally of victims.
The chicken is raw!
You're gonna kill someone.
A public vote then decides the first inmate to be dispatched to meet their doom, waved off and thanked by a sympathetic Ramsay.
Off you, fat, useless sack of Yankee, stanky doodle.
That's You're Going to Hell's Kitchen this Thursday at 9 on ITV2. And that's it then. Coming up next, it's Celebrity Sticklebrick Challenge, but for now you're up to date. Your music was Just Beats from 37Hz at 37HZ.net, and I'll be back with you soon for another Essential Celebrity Update. Ta-ra! Produced by TopicalPish.com.
We've got an email from Charlie. He said, "Hello, it's Charlie that sometimes comes into the chat room. Well, you asked on the broadcast for people's opinions, and I want to say I love it." And he's done that in capitals just to emphasise it. "I mean, it's excellent. My sides literally spit when I'm listening to it. Please keep doing it." Oh, thanks, Charlie. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is Rodders here, signing out for Rodders FM. Good night, everybody.
Yo ho, yo ho, a pirate's life for me.
Hoist the jolly todger, Rodders FM, the most swashbuckling, barnacle bashing, pirate radio station, ever to sail the seven seas. Doors, fire the cannon!
We extort, we pilfer, we filch and sack.
Yarr! There go me britches.